This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Kieran Alger about how to run your best virtual marathon.
That's how we live now, Rick. Virtually.
Virtual insanity is what we're living in, as a prophet and excellent distance runner Jamiroquai once said in the mid-90s.
One of those facts is true.
How you doing, mate? You been all right?
I have been fine, actually. Yeah, I'm doing okay. It's a sort of an open-ended question. It's I read some stats came through from the National Office of Statistics last week, which I think people will have seen, concerning lockdown and the rise in depression amongst adults. And I think that lockdown has probably seen everyone have their ups and lows, but it was quite startling stats, actually. It was it said almost one in five adults, which is sort of 19%, were likely to have experienced some form of depression during COVID-19 pandemic as of June 2020. And that's almost doubled from around one in 10, which is sort of 9.7% before the pandemic, and they class before pandemic as July last year through to March this year. And we're now well into August, so I can imagine those stats are sort of continuing to creep up a bit, certainly from personal experience. And we've talked about this on here on previous episodes about certainly when lockdown first happened and the importance of continuing to run. And I kind of think maybe I thought that running, we talked about running being the great plus and the great takeaway from the situation, but it's you know, it's I think as a country, it seems that it's had a really significant impact on people. I mean, not that may sound like I'm stating the obvious, but it's when you have a stat in front of you like that, and you kind of feel like, I mean, personally, I've been, you know, we've both been talking about using exercise to help ourselves. It's that sort of, it's really clear that the impact has been pretty immense.
I agree, mate, and I think we both obviously sign up to the idea that running or any kind of aerobic exercise can help with your mental health, and there's lots of studies to support that. It's interesting though when you talk to someone, and we've probably all got friends who just don't look at physical exercise in that way, right? And actually, it's quite a hard sell to say, you know what's worked for me with this is going out and running. Because I think if you've had a poor experience normally at school around, you know, running or sport in general, you don't turn to those things in the same way that I guess someone like myself who always enjoyed sport at school, I kind of think, well, of course running will make you feel better, I know that. But I think if you don't have that sort of backlog of positive experience of sport, it's really hard to get people who are feeling low to see that aerobic exercise might be part of the solution. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you tweeted the other day a sort of a question on the whole, if you don't have that glowing moment of running, is that what you...
Yeah, I think I was talking about being a responder, the same way that you're either a non-responder or a responder with caffeine, I think. So like if you're a non-responder, then you could have an espresso and then an hour later you could be asleep in bed. And if you're a responder, then you really get this massive kick from caffeine that, you know, it can be good or bad. And I wonder if there's the same could be true of running, because you hear from people that actually, you know, they've tried running, that they've really given it a go on it, you know, and it just hasn't worked for them. And all the same could be true of cycling or whatever. But some people, it's this real kind of like life-changing activity that rarely fails to make them feel good. I'd love to see a study about it. I would love someone more sciencey than me to look into this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I would love someone with a greater degree of, rather than you and mine's professional pseudoscience stance isn't going to cut the mustard here. No, I mean, one of the stats, you know, you have to sort of take solace in wherever you can. And it was around 1 in 25 adults saw an improvement over the period. So what I would actually love from the National Office of National Statistics, get it right, is kind of that 3%, like that 3.5% saw an improvement, like just a deeper insight into that maybe, because it'd be great to see, like, have that quantifiable knowledge if that was down to running or down to just some sort of circumstance where, you know, they've rediscovered exercise or something like that, where you know, that we can only speculate, but it'd be nice to think that was possibly the solution. But yeah, I mean, it was a stat I thought that was worth bringing up. So, you know, make sure you're talking to your friends, keep in touch with everyone. It's a tough time, so I think it's important to make sure that we all discuss our feelings a bit more.
Yeah, I think that's one of the great things about running and the area that we work in is that we can see firsthand that for lots of people it does have this kind of transformative effect physically and mentally. I've got some good news as well, just on another subject, but racing is kind of back. Yeah, it was the MK 5000 PB special over the weekend. So this was Milton Keynes 5000, and I think last year it was on the track, and for obvious reasons that kind of confined space isn't going to work this year. So I think it was on a sort of flat, closed roads course in Milton Keynes. A lot of club runners, particularly from the southeast, I guess, came down for it. Lots of very, very quick times. And great to see, like, racing on quite a big level, being back and being done sensibly. And I think, a lot of people did run really quickly. And yeah, I'm sure it was a real relief for people to get back to doing the stuff they love as well.
It's been nice to see again, actually. It's sparks of normality, which you look for in everyday sort of stuff now, that you can remind yourself that, you know, things might become normal-ish once again.
Oh, I agree, mate. I agree. I was watching a bit of kind of a running film, Ben, as well, which I wanted to watch for ages. But there's a film called Unbreakable, which is about the kind of Western States 100. I think it's the 2012 event. And this is when... It's this very interesting time where Kilian Jornet is just, he's won a few races in Europe and he's kind of coming over. And then there's three really good US runners, including Anton Kropitschka, who was a bit of a hero of mine when I was getting into the sport. He kind of runs in like, he normally runs bare chested, but when he's not doing that, he's running in like a sort of silk shirt and looking incredibly cool. He's kind of like, if you can imagine, he's sort of like the missing member of like someone like Fleet Foxes, you know, kind of like sort of indie band, and he's like effortlessly cool. And but anyway, yeah, it's great. He looks at that race and in detail, and it actually. I mean, we were talking off air about, you know, these exciting times in the kind of, I guess, in the kind of early-ish days of movements, be it music or be it running, where it can still feel like anything's possible. Maybe it's slightly more amateurish. People are training in very weird ways, probably not coached. And it was great. It was a real great reminder of what an exciting time in ultra running I thought that was back in 2012. So if anyone is listening and wants to revisit that or find out what I'm banging on about, then it's on YouTube for free. If you can just go Unbreakable Western States YouTube. It's about an hour and a half, but it's well worth it, I think.
I thought you were going to give me a recommendation to the film Unbreakable, same name, but it's like Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson. It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie. It's called Unbreakable. I thought you were going to just go on about that. I was tangent.
Again,
but, you know.
Different films for different needs. Yeah.
It's quite good. I've seen it. I recommend that version of Unbreakable.
So we're talking about virtual racing this week, aren't we? We've got Kieran Alger coming on, talking a little bit about, I guess it feels timely, doesn't it? Because we've got London Marathon is offering a virtual race for people so they can do it within 24-hour period. And I guess a lot of people can be like, oh, virtual racing, like what kind of pale comparison to the real thing. And I'm not suggesting that it compares to running the streets of London. But I think there are some advantages to the virtual race, and hopefully we're going to discuss them. So do you reckon we should bring on our guest of the week, Ben?
Our talking tech guest of the week.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio or a complete unknown. With lots and lots of marathons being cancelled, lots of people are moving to the virtual realm, including London Marathon is offering people the chance to do a virtual London Marathon. And we thought it'd be great to get our resident tech guru Kieran Algar to talk about how you can turn a virtual marathon to your favour and how you can get the very most out of this this format. So Kieran, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's interesting times for people trying to race and trying to go out and beat their records and use all that training they've done. So yeah, over to the virtual realm.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of people are going to be thinking about this, particularly people who sort of were hoping to run London in the flesh, because now it's an option, and you can, and actually they're saying that if you run a good for age time, then that can be valid as well. So there's lots of kind of motivation for doing a good virtual marathon, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was really pleased to see that actually, that they were going to basically treat it like it's a legitimate race, and all of those things still apply. And it does then sort of raise lots of questions about how you go out and where you're going to do your run. And I think there are some big benefits and things that are going to be on your side as opposed to race day. And then there's going to be some other considerations that are going to make it a little bit more tricky. But hopefully there's some tech that can help with both of those.
Great. All right. Let's talk about some of the – can we start with the negatives then, some of the things that might work against you in the virtual marathon?
Yeah. I guess, the biggest thing is going to be route planning. And although you'll have been out and done your training runs and you know your area, actually – many of those sort of areas that people are running around and probably not primed for running a fast marathon. You might have hills right outside your front door. You might have lots of sort of urban space where there's traffic lights and stops and people, twists and turns and all of those things. So, elevation, traffic lights, general traffic, hydration is going to be another consideration. Not having that, that nice punctuation that you get from the aid stations water stations every 5Ks that you'll get on a regular city marathon, that's not there to help kind of guide you along and even nudge you. So that said, you've got the opportunity to go and run wherever you like. And actually that brings with it the opportunity to go and find somewhere that might be really flat. The city marathon you were going to do has some hills in it. So there are some swings and roundabouts here.
I agree. Yeah. I think that's right. Because I was thinking, well, if I really wanted to run, I'm not sure if there's any rules around doing a lapped route, but I don't think there are. I just run around. Like, there's Dulwich Park is near me, which is possibly London's flattest park, and it's a mile once round. If I had a go at doing 26 of those, I reckon.
Oh my God, it sounds like you. I mean, this is the biggest. Before we get into this, this is the biggest like possible issue with the whole thing, is obviously for like championship times and good for age and all those sorts of things, and people submitting GPX files, GPS whatever, from Strava or however it goes, and how those things can be manipulated and stuff like that. It is quite sort of like, I don't want to sort of launch into something about the risks of the virtual marathon and what they can actually mean if it goes towards something more important, but there's definitely some, there could be some route doping, shall we say.
Are you talking about scope for cheating? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
well, I think in... So I looked into the England Athletics 5K champs, and there were guideline rules, so you couldn't run a course that was predominantly downhill. There was a limit to the distance of a single lap. I think you could only do it in maybe two... It was only like a two lap was the maximum loops that you could do. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what London does and what the other races do in terms of setting the parameters. But they do try and their best to kind of weed out that kind of behaviour. But I think there's even some really interesting variables here that are not deliberate. So your GPS watch could give you very different readings. Even if you've got, you could wear exactly the same device on one on each arm, and they would both read differently. It's possible with the way that the satellites work. And there's undoubtedly going to be some people who will run further. There'll be some people who will run less distance, depending on the quality of the chips in the watch, whether they use a phone, whether they went out and got 6 satellites to link up to their watch or only 4. All of these things will come into play. And I think, yeah, it's and then there's your route selection. You know, if you have some sections of downhill, or if you're able to go and find somewhere that is very flat, you're clearly going to have a slight advantage.
Can we talk about some of the other advantages, Kieran? Because I think that there are quite a few, aren't there? When you get into it, there's actually quite a lot of ways you can make this work for you, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, there's really interesting things. Like, all of a sudden, you can control the start time. So if you think about those race mornings, it can be quite stressful, and you often have to get up very early and get your breakfast down and do all of those things before you set off to a start line that might be a way away, or you might have even traveled between cities. All of that is now under your control. So you'll be at home. You know, you've got maybe a more comfortable start. You can start when you know you perform best. You can think about the weather and make sure that you're not going out midday when it might be the hottest. If you wanted to, you could even go out in the middle of the night and run when there's no traffic on the roads. Obviously being safe, but you know, this is all down to you. And I think that could be very interesting for some people, that it just takes away a little bit of the fuss and the stress and the friction, and you're more relaxed about it.
Definitely. Especially those things like when your start time is, what, I don't know, 8 in the morning or something like that, and you've got to travel there, which means breakfast, like you're up at 4 and you're eating breakfast at 5, and no one wants to eat a load of food at 5 a.m, like a big meal, but you have to because you're doing that. Like, none of that taking place is massive.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And then, you know, when you get out onto the course, you've got things like, there's no other runners that are going to be in your way. So if you find a course that's fairly open, there's no weaving. There's also no potential, you know, we're all probably quite guilty at some point in our marathon running where you get swept along in that first sort of few miles by the crowd, run too fast. You know, this is all now down to you, and you can control that a little bit more. I guess the flip side of that is that there's no one to carry you on when you're hanging at the last sort of 4 miles, but that's quite nice about the pacing. And I think, actually, going back to that GPS point, I think in my experience of running marathons, I've done about 40 or so, the GPS sort of tends to clock more mileage over an official course. You always feel like you've run further. So this might be a helping hand. You might not have to run as far.
I think that's really true, Kieran. I think at London, I think it's very easy to run 26.5 miles, I reckon, with all the weaving. So yeah, and that's a difference of maybe a couple of minutes. So maybe more. So that's great. I like the idea of controlling the start time, because I think there are some studies that show that VO2 max tends to be higher in the evening. So actually, a lot of people might run better, you know, from if they were doing 5 to 8 or whatever.
Hot,
you know.
Tip from Pearson.
There you go. Yeah.
And that split between, you know, what is it? It's kind of, what is it, owls and larks or whatever. If people perform better depending on the rhythms of their own body clock. So it might be that you're better at 3 in the afternoon than you are in the morning. So you can set that. I think London's going to have a window. It's a period of time, isn't it? So there's like a 24-hour window to run it. But within that, you can find the time that's right for you.
What's going to be the biggest challenge then for anyone taking on this virtual marathon?
Hands down for me, it's route planning.
Right.
You know, you've got to find a good 26 miles to run. I think that, you know, there are ways to do this using tech. You know, potentially the easiest way to do would be to look in your area and find your official marathon course and hopefully that's a nice flat one, or one that's not too far away that you could go. And then you've got a route that's already been laid out. They tend, you know, the race organizers tend to sort of select courses for their runability. And then you have to find out when you can go and run it, you know. And I'd be keen to do that if it's within the window on a Sunday morning, very early before the traffic comes out on a Sunday, and go and run one of those courses where you can probably use some of the roads as well. You can obviously then look on, you can get those routes from official sites, or you can search on Strava for previous competitors who've done those routes and download the files. And then you get into things like, you know, you're going to have to navigate these courses as well. So if you're not familiar with the route, you have to know when you're going to have to turn left and right, and you've got no markings. So that's getting into the territory of some watches will enable you to load up the GPX files and have turn by turn navigation on the wrist, or you're going to have to know the route. Again, I think a lot of this comes back to, you sort of lean to the idea that a loop is probably a good idea, even though I think a lot of people don't naturally like to run loops. But I reckon a 10K loop that's controllable flat has a huge amount of benefits, not only for route planning and route guidance, but then you get into the realm of where you can set up your own water stations. If you have a family member who'll come out, you'll then see them four times if you've got a 10K loop. That can really help with evening out that kind of the struggle that you might have with hydration. You then don't necessarily have to carry quite as much water. You can obviously create your own routes, and there are some tools I think that are interesting for this if that's what you plan to do. There's a tool called Komoot, which is really good for planning off-road. You can't search by distance on that, unfortunately, so you can't find other people's routes for a set distance, but it will guide you to places that are greener to run and probably have fewer people on them. You might have a few more hills in those places if it's off-road, but you can check out the elevation gain and the kind of terrain that's underfoot for all of those. Strava's brilliant for finding routes from other runners. You can obviously create your own routes on the map. And I think my favorite thing about the Strava planning tool is that it'll give you an estimated moving time for the distance. And I think that's also based on the kind of terrain that you're going to encounter. So you can see if a route might be quicker than another route. Garmin Connect is another one that has caught the courses function in there, lets you find popular routes that people have run before. And the good thing about that is you can filter that by distance. The only negative with Garmin Connect courses is that there's quite a lot of the cycling data seems to get mixed in, and it doesn't really filter it out as reliably as you might like. So, yeah, you might be getting a route that someone cycled rather than run. And then one other app that I've sort of used before, which is quite good for the navigation point, is a thing called RunGo. So this is route guide, route planning, and then also it turns into turn-by-turn audio route guidance on an app. So you can pair in your Bluetooth headphones, and then you can navigate, which is going to be a key thing if you're running somewhere you don't know. Yeah, and then I think, you know, my instinct would be to do a 10K loop, do it early on a weekend, find somewhere that's probably close to your home. So that last 2Ks, I really like the idea of coming in with the last 2Ks, are the 2Ks that you always do when you're finishing your training runs coming home, because the familiarity, just, you know it, you've run it before, you know what's left to do, and I think your brain will just go, all right, I can do that. So you could do a 10K loop nearby and then finish those last two somewhere close to home.
I think that's really good, Kieran, because I think it's also slightly easier to curate a kind of 10-kilometer flat route than it is to create some kind of absolute masterpiece that's 26.2 miles long that you're probably not going to get to a recce properly. Like, it's a bit more controllable, isn't it, at 10 kilometers, I think.
Yeah, you might be able to, you know, you, depending on where you live, you might be able to get that inside one of the kind of big parks, or, you know, it just gives you slightly more options of running in places that are going to be more manageable, I think. Looking at canals, looking at parks, and I know some people have done, this probably won't get you 10Ks, but people who run around stadiums, you know, things like that you're looking out for, that where there's going to be space and you can clock in a few miles.
I like the idea of your own hydration station, because this is one area, well, one of many areas in which the pros have a kind of slightly different experience to the kind of everyday marathon runner. Because, you know, often you see Kipchoge, say, just reach in for his bottle with some Morton in, which he can then you know, than he let, then sort of chucks after 100 meters. And you can't, you know, you can't do that in a marathon because you'd have to carry, you know, like a liter and a half worth of liquid or whatever. Whereas actually, if you had your own like hydration station that you could return to, then actually that all that stuff can get a bit more tailored and you don't actually have to carry as much as well, which I think is another, another advantage.
Yeah, you could leave your gels, you know, you can leave gels to pick up for that one 10K loop, or you can, and because the other options of hydration, if you're going to go out and do a 26 on your own, you know, a decent hydration bladder, most of them will carry up to 2 liters, or an ultra vest will have a liter and a half in the soft glass on the front. So you're going to have to refill probably based on the guidelines. You know, the sort of recommended guidelines are around 400 to 800 mils of fluid per hour. So at some point, you know, if you're doing a 3 hour, even you're going to have to load up a little bit. So that takes that out of the equation. And I really love the idea that you're back to see your family or whoever might come and aid, you know, or you can stash the, you could stash it in the hedge, but that's a bit risky, right?
Where's it gone?
Depends what park it is. I think I like the idea of actually setting up a table. I think that would make you feel so pro if you were like outside your house, you had a table, you know, and you could decorate the bottle like they always do to make them stand out so that they know, you'll know it's yours because it's your table. But I think you should definitely do it, like put a sticker on it, make sure you know it's yours.
I'm pretty sure that's going to, unlike it, and this is another benefit as opposed to running a normal marathon where you might only get to see your family or friends once, this is going to give you a boost every 6 miles or however you know, the distance that you decide to set that table at, but you're just going to get that little bit to push you into the next round. And I think psychologically there's actually something to be said about becoming familiar with the loop as well. You start to have more regular markers that you can bite off, and it can feel more manageable, I think, as well because of that.
Can we talk a little bit about how we could use a watch, say, to our advantage when it comes to a virtual race?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few key things, and I, you know, again, the navigation, if you're not going to do the loop, is really key. And this will depend very much on whether or not you've got the right kind of watch. But if you're looking like the Garmin Fenix 6 Pro or a Polar Grit X, other watches will let you upload that route onto your watch. And then they'll offer some kind of vibration to let you know either if a turn is coming up or handily if you've gone the wrong way. So that's a really good thing if you want to take your mind off having to memorize the route or worry about the route, and you can just get your head down and run. I think another thing, you know, a lot of people rely on paces to set PBs in marathons. They'll fall in behind their flag and run that and let someone else do the mental work of pacing. And there's virtual paces on many watches that will let you program a target time and a distance. And then you can set the fields up so you can do things like it will tell you where you are ahead or behind against that virtual pacer time. You can also see like a recent split pace of what your recent mile pace was, and your target pace now that you're going to have to hit your goal if you've fallen behind or pushed ahead. Those things, yeah, can keep you, you know, they just keep you on target nicely if you haven't got other things to carry you through like you might have on a normal marathon race day. And then I think, again, if you're not going to do that loop with a 10K or whatever, you've got to think about hydration. You have that sort of natural reminder with water stations in marathons to, I better have a drink now, or I should probably take that gel now. That's gone. So I definitely recommend setting up reminders on your watch. You can set little alerts to buzz every so often based on distance or time, and that use that to kind of plug that gap. And then if you're really into it and you want to go a little further, we're starting to see things like on the Polar Grit X, there's a feature that will actually calculate your fueling strategy, and then it will use your heart rate and your real-time intensity to actually tell you when to eat. It's really, really handy, and it's not about just incremental kind of timestamps. It's actually looking at how you're performing in the moment. So it's a very, very handy feature. And then I think one of the other final things is that you haven't, you know, another thing that's going to be missing is the mile or kilometer markers. So you can't, a lot of us, I think, would look at our watch when we pass that kilometer and see how many minutes have ticked by since we did the last one. That's gone. So you're relying on your GPS, and real-time pace on GPS can fluctuate. It can jump around all over the place. So if you're going to do that, I would suggest that you have a screen on your watch that shows you the average lap pace the distance you've done so far, because it evens out those kind of lurches that you might get just from real-time pace.
That's good. So I've definitely had a watch before that's like that, that jumps around a bit and you're like, am I the fastest or slowest runner that's ever lived here?
Yeah. And you haven't got that opportunity to kind of reconcile that against what's happening in the real world. Like you have, if you pass a marathon mile marker, and you can see, okay, it's been 7 minutes since the last marker went down. So I tend to put both those stats on my screen, real-time pace and an average lap pace, just to make sure I've got an indication of what's happening to me in the moment, and then also that I'm hitting the average that I need.
And this is surely an opportunity, Kieran, for multi-watches, right? This is like, you're coming into your own here as a man who's often seen with two watches. This is what you've been waiting for.
You should always wear more than one watch. I mean, I don't know. This is the thing. That is a big point, because the last thing you want is to go out and do it, and then for some reason your watch hasn't recorded, or the GPS route has gone wrong. And it does happen. It can happen. Where it has a glitch and it misses out 4 miles of your course. So I would definitely recommend wearing six watches, a foot pod, a chest strap. No, you know, run with a backup tracker for sure. If you can get hold of a second watch, borrow off a friend, or use an app as backup, then I would definitely recommend it.
Kieran, that's great. I think you actually made me quite excited about the virtual marathon. And I can see... Particularly, I guess one thing we haven't talked about is that you could do your virtual marathon with a couple of other similarly paced people, couldn't you? Which would give it a slight more a feel of like running in a small pack as part of as you might do a kind of smaller marathon. So I think if you did that as well with all these other advantages, I think you could. Yeah, you absolutely could run a PB for
sure. Yeah, get your reverse goose formation. You mean one meter.
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, can we get the Kipchoge flying V with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be exciting, and I think it'll be a new experience for most people. And yeah, if you set it up right, I don't see why there's any reason that you can't go out and make the most of it. Have a really good crack.
That's great. Yeah. Thanks so much, Kim, for coming on and talking about that. That's interesting. Are you going to have a go at your own virtual marathon? Do you see this happening?
I might have a go, yeah. I don't know whether I'll hit my PB. I haven't done enough training. But yeah, I might go out and do it and just do it for fun.
Yeah, me too. I think I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to give it a go, see what I can do.
But you're ridiculous. There's nothing fun about a marathon. So
if you're running 1 mile loops for 26, it's so much fun.
Yeah. I'm just going to go and watch Rick do that and...
Yeah. Oh, please! I tell you what, you could be the hydration station manager.
I'll be your
for
hydration
me and Kieran.
Station, your hype man, and also your biggest critic.
Yeah.
Right. Great.
Perfect. That's perfect.
So, thanks for having me on. Cheers, guys.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest Kieran Alger, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all of your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. But in the meantime, why not subscribe to Runner's World magazine today and get 3 issues for £5? Visit hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.